Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance?
Real energy.
Real energy. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with the diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. This is the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at the Natural News Radio Network, that's naturalnewsradio.com, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. You can call in just to listen or to make a comment, ask a question. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week. That's mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com. Attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is December 8th, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my co-host with the most, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, how are you doing this evening?
I'm absolutely wonderful, Alan. As you saw, I just was able to get in right before the show started. I had a dear friend who called, who's a doctor out in Las Vegas, who's working with Native American drives, and it was kind of interesting because they're looking for some alternative type treatment. So it's just very interesting, you know, altogether. But how are you, Alan?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. Have taken a couple of bumps, but I've had a couple of really highlights this week, Mayor. One, I don't even know if I should mention on the air, but it was so incredible. I think I will anyway. I have talked about in the past how under federal civil rights law, and this is the law that allows employees all over the country to refuse mandatory vaccines at work for religious reasons, and talked about how broad the law is, federal civil rights law, that it not only protects the obvious beliefs that include theistic beliefs with a belief in God, but also non-theistic moral and ethical beliefs that meet certain criteria, including that they have to be held with the same strength as traditional religious views. And that phrase, non-theistic, in federal civil rights law certainly could include atheistic. Well, I had an atheist client who was successful in getting a religious exemption at work with the help of a legal argument that I put together based on this language in the federal civil rights law. It's not just any sincerely held belief. It has to meet specific criteria, but it's fascinating that the law has gone to such great lengths to be inclusive in terms of the beliefs that are considered protected religious beliefs. So you don't even have to have a belief in God in the Judeo-Christian sense of that word, for example, to qualify for religious exemption. I think it was a long shot, not because the law doesn't support it, but because just in common sense terms, it's hard to imagine somebody saying, yes, we're going to give a religious waiver to an atheist. But that was one of a couple of things this week that were really high points in my day, and that's making up for feeling a little under the weather otherwise. How about yourself?
Very, very good. You know, my youngest granddaughter is now 8 days old, and thank God, doing very, very nicely. I miss my daughter, who's my partner in the office, but she still helps out immensely by checking the schedule and making sure that everything's taken care of, you know, so that's really nice, you know. But, Alan, I wanted to talk about something, because I want your legal opinion and your legal input on the whole thing that came out from the Center for Disease Control, that essentially the flu vaccine this year doesn't work. And I found it very interesting, because there's somehow an implication that it worked before. I mean, it's never worked. But let's just take that it doesn't work this year. They now readily admitted that. What's your thoughts on getting an injunction against hospitals mandating a flu vaccine, or anyone mandating the flu vaccine, not only to hospitals, you know? And secondly, I know it's kind of a little broad, because and the second one is a class action lawsuit against everyone in this country who bought and paid for a flu vaccine, asking for their money back.
Well, playing devil's advocate, which, you know, Mayor, is a lawyer's job, at least
right,
in part. You know, the story we've always gotten from folks with flu or any other vaccine, I suppose, but I think it's come up more with the flu, because the flu is, I think, more susceptible than probably any other vaccine, with maybe the exception of the Gardasil vaccine, susceptible to having mainstream medicine thrown in your face that says it doesn't work. In fact, we've even talked, and of course, Dr. King has been on repeatedly making this point, that there's even studies showing that the flu vaccine can be counterproductive. You have more flu-like illnesses if you get a vaccine than if you don't. But the story they always come up with is, of course, they're saying this to protect a financial interest, probably more than anything else. But what they say is, well, even if it only protects against some strains, or even if it's not the dominant strains, it still protects against something, so you're still better off with it than without it. I I'm not sure, Mayor, about the idea of injunction or class action, partly because I just don't have, I don't think I have enough information to be clear on that. So there may be grounds for those based on what you're talking about, but I'm not sure what the legal theory would be. Because I think at least as a starting place, the employers, if they have at-will employees, they can unilaterally decide to require a vaccine as a condition of employment. And the vaccines are arguably, now we of course can argue this both ways, but again, I'm playing the devil's advocate side at the moment.
Right.
Once a vaccine is licensed, and the whole purpose of the licensing procedure is to ensure that they are safe and effective, now you and I might, and many of our listeners might agree that that process is, let's just say, broken, but the legal status, that was a polite word, wasn't it? But the legal status of arguably of a licensed vaccine is that it's presumed to be safe and effective. Now, maybe this latest CDC information is what rebuts the presumption. But I don't know. It seems like an uphill battle. I tend to lean in the direction of thinking that our efforts are really better put into the legislative arena than the judicial arena. And part of that is because I've seen historically in recent years when people have challenged vaccines in court on sort of broad general principles. If you've got somebody whose specific right has been violated, that's one thing. Sometimes those kinds of cases are really good court cases. But when people are challenging the broader principles. For example, a couple of years ago, there was a nurse in South Carolina who went to court saying, I have a constitutional right to decide what to put in my body. And as much as I would like for that case to have won and agree with the underlying concept in concept, I cringed when I heard about it. As I said, there's no way she's going to win this. We don't have that right. We should have that right. But what we've got to do, but we don't. And the only way we can get that, well, not the only way, but probably the most likely way, because what would really be great, Mayor, is if we could get a medical freedom amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But more likely, even if still quite an uphill battle, is to pass laws at the state law level to give us the right to refuse. And this piece of information that we have now, and they'll just hear in this last day or two, where the CDC is saying, oops, never mind, and unusual that they're sort of going public with that in the way that they are, but that's the sort of information that is really helpful for us to use to educate legislators to say.
I agree with you about the best answer would be long-term legislation. But the bottom line is we've got a unique situation here. We're not saying that last year's vaccine was no good. We're not saying that next year's vaccine is no good. They've admitted, and people have been damaged by this. They've been damaged, even if they paid $5 for the vaccine. You know, so the damage is two parts. One, that they were forced to take an ineffective vaccine, and secondly, they had to pay for it. And injunction is hard because where are you going to bring the injunction against each hospital individually? But class action lawsuit reminds me of Vioxx. The people who took Vioxx, and Vioxx was approved by the Food and Drug Administration as a safe and effective medication, even though the data was out there way before the injuries came out, and they took a big hit. It was $5 billion that Merck took as a hit. But even more, the precedent would set, would truly, possibly that could change the concept of making it mandatory, because there'd be fear on the hospital's part that they will end up with some liability. Not liability, you know, that someone was damaged by the vaccine, but they were financially damaged because they took something that was not, I would stay away from the safe arguments. I'm looking at effective. And those are the two criteria, safe and effective. And clearly this year's vaccine is absolutely not effective. I mean, that's, I think they're trying to nip it in the butt. That's why they came out with a statement, not assuming that anyone would go after them and stop the idea that people had to pay for something that's ineffective.
Well, the story I'm looking at says that 52% of 85 samples were different than the virus strains in the vaccine. So what they're going to say is it's still 48% effective.
Let me tell you something. That's every year. There's something different this year. Every year that comes out the same thing. Never does it come out in December. It always comes out in February or March, where they said this year's vaccine didn't seem to be effective. It came out here. There was no reason that they have to say that, because it's every year the same thing. Something is uniquely different and may require some investigation. But let's make the assumption. Let's make one assumption, you know, that the vaccine is agreed to be ineffective. Do you like the idea of a class action lawsuit? Let's make the assumption we can overcome that burden. And getting a class action lawsuit certified is very difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. But let's assume that the evidence we're going to come up with, which I think we can come up with, that the vaccine is ineffective, yet people had to pay for it and lost their job over it.
You know, what they say is that it's going to protect against whatever strains it protects against, and if those don't happen to be the circulating strains, it's still protective against the strains that are in there, so it's still a useful product.
I think that's a lie that will come out, and they're trying to kind of hedge their losses by agreeing that it's partially ineffective. I'm convinced it's completely ineffective, and that's the reason. Look, I'm making that assumption. Let's just cover that assumption. Does that strengthen the idea of bringing a class action lawsuit and certify it with someone who had to go to Walgreens and spend $5 for the vaccine?
So class action against who?
That's why I'm asking your legal.
I think the problem here is with solely with the FDA. If they licensed it, then they are the ones who officially and formally, I don't want to use the word certified, but that's the word that comes to mind here, because I don't want to confuse it with certifying a class.
Let's go back to Vioxx. The suit was not against the FDA. It was against Merck, because they knew that this Vioxx was dangerous, and they still put it on the market, even though the FDA approved it. So it would be the same thing. It would be collectively against all the, I'm not sure if it's Wyeth. I can't remember the name of the companies who make the vaccine. Against the manufacturers.
Well, with the vaccinated compensation program holding them free from liability. Now, I don't know if this would apply to effectiveness or just harm, so I'm just talking off the cuff here. But I don't know. Because what they're saying is that there was a mutation, and I don't think you'd have to argue that they knew there was going to be a mutation. I think that might be a hard case to make.
Let me tell you something. Let's go one step further. Vioxx, did not go against the FDA. It went against Merck. And the same thing here. It's an argument. They knew or should have known that this mutation would have taken place. They knew about this. I mean, this is all they're kind of hedging their losses. The question in my mind is, why did they come out with this right now? It made no sense. There's no gain to it. I mean, this has been going on for years, where aside from the fact that the vaccines have been ineffective, but the strains weren't the same strains, but they never came out with it in December. They're worried about something really, really problematic that they're trying to get on top of right now. It's kind of like admitting I murdered someone, because they're eventually going to find out that you really did it, and hoping that that there'll be no repercussions. I mean, the idea now that nurses will be have to wear masks or get thrown out of the hospital to take an ineffective vaccine, and I think we can prove that it's totally ineffective using through the Freedom of Information Act. We will obtain the data that will show that it's completely ineffective. I think that's the only thing that the administration wants to release is torture reports, you know, which are completely fabricated altogether. You know, the ones that will be released now the next day or two, which will put lots of our operatives in the field in danger. You know, and it's interesting that report, just switching topics a little bit, was as one-sided as could be, because they said in that report that there was no evidence that what they did brought about any type of intelligence. Yet everyone says it did. What they did may have been wrong, but now they're going one step further there and then saying that it didn't bring about any intelligence. And I have a feeling the same thing is here, that they've given in a little bit, knowing that the vaccine was completely ineffective and people knew about this and still proceeded with the program. I could see if they really wanted to do the right thing, they would stop the program right now. That Italy did that. Italy stopped all vaccine, all flu vaccine after they had 19 deaths, which the drug company then said, we didn't know about this, we didn't know what happened, and they've kind of held the drug companies not liable. But in the meantime, in Italy right now, there's no flu vaccine being given.
Well, yeah, and as I'm listening to you talk, Mayor, I'm finding myself wanting to take a step back and say, what are the reasons? What's the range of possible reasons that they might do this? If it's and I'm listening to you talk and thinking more about it, I feel, yeah, this might be a way to hedge their bet on what is a vaccine that's even far less effective than they're letting on, because that way the people out there who are getting the flu anyway after they get the shot are going to say, oh, well, I guess I was in that 52%.
Right, right.
You know, better luck next year, you know, rather than say, wait a minute, everybody I know who got the shot is also getting the flu. What's going on here, you know? So, yeah, maybe they are hedging their bet or possibly, I suppose, and I'm just getting into the realm of speculation here, possibly distracting from something else altogether. But it's a real interesting point. Yeah, it is awfully early for them to be coming out and making this, and you would have a better idea of me than this, but when I'm reading 85 cases, is that really a large enough sample to go public?
Sample, right, exactly, exactly. I mean, there's something, we need someone like Alex Jones, Mike Adams, people who've done work going through the Freedom of Information Act, or there's been a couple of attorneys who've done that, and I think I'm going to email them, and we have enough doctors who can read the data. That's not me. I'm not an immunologist, but we've got some. Dr. King would be one who would, when we can get the real data, not just the scraps that are coming out here, and something has to be done to... The idea that nurses are being fired, that people, it's just preposterous, or have to wear a mask, which you so well outlined last week how stupid it is, you know. But I'm not going after the safety of the vaccine or the side effects of the vaccine. I'm going from the aspect that this year's vaccine, I have a feeling we're going to find, is completely ineffective, even by their standards.
Well, you know, if we could hold the industry financially responsible for ineffective vaccines, that would take put a huge dent in the this whole flu vaccine agenda. It's such an incredibly broad and aggressive agenda, and there's such substantial evidence weighing against it. But, Mayor, let me tell you, you know, there's these little glimmers of light that show up from time to time amidst all of the gray cloudiness in this issue. And I reformulated rewrote my formal legal argument explaining why these aggressive face mask policies. And basically, as far as I'm concerned, any face mask policy that is based on immunization status violates federal civil rights law. So I repackaged and rewrote my policy, and I sent it to a hospital on behalf of a client. And I want to read you the email I got back from the client. She says, I had my meeting with HR today, human resources. It was concluded that I did not have to wear my mask because I don't work directly with patients. But additionally, HR apologized to all of the staff who did wear masks
Wow.
or obtain a flu shot against their will, and recommended that everyone remove their masks.
Wow.
She says, so,
oh, my.
So not only did you impact my life, but all of the other staff whose rights were violated. These are the kind of victories.
Oh, let me tell you something. I just have one more thought on this, because I've been obsessing about this all day. What about if we ask the hospitals in some type of legal format that they have to insist that all nurses and all employees wear masks because the vaccine that they're taking is not protecting against the most serious strain of influenza, and that their patients will be at risk because of that.
Oh, so everybody has to wear a mask.
It has to wear a mask. Right.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, the fact, but Mayor, you've just given me another legal argument here. The fact that they're not going to do that in a season where it's been determined that
right.
the mask doesn't work, I mean, that the vaccine doesn't work, just shows that, you know, could is an argument as to the lack of that the mask policy that they do have is not really about protecting staff and patients.
Right.
But it is sort of funny.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
I'm sorry,
please. No, I would love to see their response to that. You know, what you're, I need you to send me that. That was that was not a small victory. That was a big victory within this whole thing, you know, that you have an exponential effect on the mask policy. But I love the idea. We go after the mask, you know, and we're going to argue that everyone has to wear a mask this year.
Right, because the vaccine doesn't work.
and I'd like, you're going to think about how to frame it, where to start with this, you know, is it a hospital, a multiple series, that, you know, we're demanding that everyone wear a mask. I'm trying to think of how that gets – I can't think right now how to get it, how to put it together. But clearly, it's a very strong argument. I mean, even if it's ineffective against the most critical strain, it's the H3N2 strain or something, you know, which is the only one of the flu vaccine strains in the vaccine that really protects you against a kind of a serious type. The other ones are just nothing, you know, like cold-like symptoms, you know. But that's the one – that was when the H1N1 flu, and that was the vaccine, and they incorporated that now into the vaccine, and now it's absolutely ineffective. And it never was effective to start with, but by their own admission is ineffective.
Mayor, the mask policy has been such a really difficult issue in the healthcare worker arena, and having worked with a few hundred healthcare workers now around the country, I see that most hospitals, their first policy with respect to religious exemptions is that they require a member of the clergy being involved in some way, write a letter, sign a form, or something like that. And that's a clear, blatant violation of federal civil rights law. And when I call that to an employer's attention, they will almost always fix that. But they will dig in their heels on the mask policy. And I have been struggling, frankly, to figure out how to put this together in a way that is truly clear and convincing, that even a hospital attorney who's been given orders to argue against it is still going to, at the end of the day, say, you know what, they're right. And where I've got it right now, Mayor, is that I have actually six separate arguments, reasons why these overly aggressive mask policies violate federal civil rights law. And you know what? If I win on only one of those, the policy is still unlawful. So I think that maybe, and that was one thing that was different the way that I organized and presented the arguments, that may have been part of why it was successful. But that's an isolated case, but it's an important one, because this is one where
I've seen
the hospitals over and over again, they just don't want to back down.
Yeah, that's, you're going to think about this now because you've got a very good legal mind. But what do we do about requiring them to wear a mask? I mean, you know, that's, you know, you're using their argument. You know, I mean, I can't see how they can. And that would be phenomenal if they would, because it's never going to happen. I mean, that's just absolutely not going to happen, to have a hospital and everyone walks around in a mask. It's like, but it would truly drive home the point.
Well, if they didn't do it, I don't see how we can, I can't see a legal argument for saying they have to do that. But what I can say is, since they are not doing that, then clearly all of their other mask policies don't make sense either.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that they
exactly.
won't do it is a reason that their other mask policies are not valid.
We have to bring it to their attention that they have to do that if they're going to be honest about it, that the reason for getting the flu vaccine is to protect the staff and the patients from influenza.
Well, I'll give it some more thought, definitely.
Good, good, really good. I think we're about ready for a break, Alan.
We are. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. We're only halfway through, folks, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. iFatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called UltraRush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. UltraRush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and I just want to mention real quick, Mayor, before we get going again, that you are a wealth of not only terrific information, but also terrific supplements. Vitamin D is the big one that I'm always getting from you, and also vitamin C that you combine in your home first repertoire of products, many, many different products, but I'm a real big fan and of the vitamin D and vitamin C that you mix with probiotics, which helps the absorption and so forth. So I just want to remind folks to go to homefirst.com and check out the vast array of supplements there that you can use to help keep your health and help you to sort of walk the talk as well as talk the talk, because we have all these discussions and conversations about why you might want to delay vaccines or forego vaccines altogether. But there are other things we can do to take care of our health. And Mayor, you are a terrific resource for supporting and helping people to do that. So I just wanted to, I think we slide by too many shows without mentioning that sometimes. So I just wanted to throw that in there and let people know they can go to homefirst.com.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. I really appreciate that. You know, I just want to mention two things. One is, you put out an outstanding piece every week telling about the upcoming shows. And I want to let people know how they can subscribe to it, because not only do you talk about the upcoming shows, but you also have some of the relevant articles from the scientific literature and from the news on issues of vaccines. And one of the first ones you had is the CDC saying that the flu vaccine this year is not as effective. How do people find your current update? How do they get on your list to be able to get the mailing from you?
Well, thanks, Mayor. Sure. Folks can go to vaccinerights.com, and I think there's a link near the upper right-hand corner that says Vaccine Rights e-newsletter. And if you just click on that link, there's a little box there to sign up. And, yeah, I get that out every week. Now, speaking of that, though, Mayor, let me go ahead and take a moment here to mention that and let listeners know that we will not be doing live shows the last 2 weeks of December, right before Christmas and right before New Year's. But we will be back in January, and I don't have that date, but it's that first Monday in January. Let's see, we want to be about the 6th, give or take. So we'll be here next week, and Natural News Radio will be running some of our a couple of our really good recent past shows. So it will be broadcasting a rerun, but a good rerun on Natural News as Natural News Radio those last couple of weeks. But otherwise, the e-newsletter does go out every week and has those things that you said, Mayor. So thanks for bringing that up as well. You can sign up at vaccinerights.com.
You know what, Alan, I'm going to ask you to do is put the link onto Blog Talk Radio and to National News so people can sign up right from there with a hyperlink to the newsletter.
Great idea, Mayor. I will do that. I'll put it in the show description so people can do that. Thank you.
Thank you. I also want to mention something a little bit off topic, but what we're talking about as far as medical care, that many of you know that the president this week has been complaining about a sore throat and was diagnosed with acid reflux. And here's a perfect example of, now this is the most important person in the world from the standpoint of being protected, but sometimes you don't want this type of care. He ended up getting a CAT scan for a gastroscopic CAT scan, about $30,000 or $40,000 worth of treatment. And this is definitely the whole problem with healthcare, unnecessary medical care, you know. But more important, he's going to be treated with some very dangerous drugs, and people should know about this. He's going to be treated most probably with Nexium. Nexium is what's called a proton pump inhibitor. It blocks the acid production in your stomach. But what I found interesting was in one of the news releases, Nexium has sales of $3.9 billion. That's just one of the drugs being used to treat acid reflux. And there are so many wonderful natural treatments for the treatment of acid reflux. And, Mr. President, if someone, your staff is listening, you know, I'll start with the simplest one, and that is chewing on a piece of wax. The chewing on wax, what it does is it releases enzymes in your mouth, and it just digests the food. I think the theory is someone who suffers from acid reflux, which is not related to any serious underlying medical condition, which about 99.9% aren't, is not that there's too much acid in the stomach, but there's not enough digestive enzymes to digest the food. So many alternative medicine practitioners realize the goal is to digest your food better. Now, I'm going to give them a few tips right now. One, chew at least 5 or 10 times with each bite. Don't eat in your car, in your limousine. I know you've got a very busy schedule. You know, you want to eat at the table. You don't want to have your BlackBerry on. You don't want to have anything on. You want to sit and eat quietly. Take a few minutes extra to eat. Also, don't drink water with your meal or any type of liquids. Drink it before or after. The reason for that is when you drink with your meal, as Americans, we have bad habits of chowing our food down. So we take a bite of food and we drink to just get it down quickly before it has a chance to be digested. Using these simple methods will many times relieve the acid reflux. And then just add to it, we have a great product called Betanate, something we've had for about 6 years. It's a chewable digestive enzyme with probiotic. There's sweetened with xylitol and stevia, an absolute natural product which we've had enormous success of stopping people from having to be on pharmaceuticals or for them to be able to get off of their pharmaceuticals. Inexpensive treatment, but forget about inexpensive, it's safe and effective. Now, what's one of the reasons why you don't want to reduce your acid? People who are on Nexium, there's study after study, and any one of the other ones, it's Nexium, Prilosec, Protonix, Acifex, they're all the same family. They have a 10 times increased risk of pneumonia, especially during the cold and flu season. Why? Because the viruses and bacteria, which comprise the respiratory infections, are killed in an acid environment. Now you reduce the acid in the stomach, they can thrive and multiply rapidly, and all of a sudden it becomes symptomatic. So here we are, the first thing I always ask is someone when I see them or they call me about what can I do this season to protect myself from colds and flu. Obviously, vitamin D is very important. But secondly, if you're on any type of acid blocking medications, you have to do everything possible to get off of them. So, Mr. President, a little tip from the Know Your Rights Tower.
Mayor, thank you. That was very informative. And the cynical part of me, not cynical about anything that you said, but cynical with respect to President Obama paying any attention to it, is that it's going to be real hard for him to promote pharmaceutical profits if he actually decides he wants to deal with this condition effectively and quickly. So he may tolerate it for a while, especially if he has stock in those companies.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. But I don't want to see the president come down with pneumonia. You know, that's not the goal, no matter what. No matter if you believe or don't believe in his policies. You know, he's still the president of this country. And he's already weak as it is with his standing around the world. The last thing we need is a sick president also.
Fair enough, Mayor. Mayor, from time to time, I work with legislative activists around the country, and there are many, many parts and pieces to that work. But one of the things that I add to it is I'll make the legal arguments as to why a bill is unconstitutional, for example, if it's something that's trying to limit access to exemptions like some laws that have gotten passed in recent years and some states have done, or otherwise packaging information to try and help legislative activists. And because I'm working with so many healthcare workers, I have people, I'm offering and people are asking for support. I have just completed a document, and I will probably put it out on Natural News and I'll post it on my website. But it's a one-page summary, and this is I'm not a legislative activist expert, but I do have some some strong opinions. That we need to be very careful about how we approach these matters to be as effective as we can be, and then about some ways to do that. And legislators, they're bombarded by people all the time. So I think it's usually, especially a controversial issue like vaccines, it's usually going to be ineffective to send them an email or write a letter. Those things will go into a black hole and never be heard of again. Or if you get a response, it'll be a form letter that doesn't even address any of the issues that you raised. And that is my experience in writing with legislators and other state officials in my own state here in North Carolina. Not a put down to those people, but just a recognition that they are too busy to handle every letter or email that comes in personally. It's just not going to happen. So you've got to sit face-to-face with these people, schedule an appointment. And then secondly, I think you've got to have a real clear, focused goal. We want a law that says XYZ. In the case of flu vaccines, we either need a law that says the hospitals or employers can't mandate flu vaccines at all, or a law that says we have a right to refuse without penalty flu vaccines in the workplace, whether it's medical, religious, or personal or philosophical objections. And if you can get your goal and a summary of your support down to one page, I think that's really an ideal thing. One of the things that I think has been a mistake is a lot of people will pull together information and they want to see how much information they can pull together to be as convincing as possible. And my concern about that is that nobody's ever going to see it. They're not going to take a day off to read, you know, a volume of information. So what I've put together with these ideas in mind, Mayor, is a one-page summary letter that outlines, that states a specific need, either no mandates or complete freedom to refuse, which is effectively the same thing, and three simple reasons that I then provide the support information on, in this particular case, pages 2 through 6, but the reason it's another 5 pages, probably a one page of that is just the footnotes or references. But the three reasons that I've picked, and I think you have to pick reasons that are as irrefutable as possible. You know, people complain about conflict of interest, and that's a huge problem. But you know what, Mayor? There's a counter argument to that, a clear counter argument. I don't buy it, but it's there. You know what? We have to have the experts making the decisions in this area, and it just so happens that the experts are the ones who are in industry. So we have to tolerate those conflicts of interest. Now, I'm not saying don't raise conflict of interest as a reason. I'm just saying there's a reason that that's not one in my top three. And other people could take a different approach and include that in their main point or one of their main points, and that wouldn't be wrong. I'm not saying there's only one way to do this, but here's what I've done with it. And with other people doing other things, then collectively we'll cover all the bases anyway, I suppose. But my three main reasons are, one, the mainstream medical sources show that the flu vaccines are of questionable effectiveness or even counterproductive. And when it comes from mainstream medical literature, the Cochrane Collaboration, the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, all these different mainstream sources, it's really hard to argue against that in any credible way. My second point is the statistics from the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. You know, a lot of times people cite VEERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Well, those are only suspected adverse events, but the government's not going to pay out in the injury compensation program unless they're conceding, in effect, at least, that there's been a vaccine injury. So I say use those figures. And you know what, Mayor? Something on the order of 2/3 to 3/4, if not more, of the payouts in recent months are for flu vaccine injuries and deaths, and we can document that. And then my third reason is that pharmaceutical companies routinely engage in massive criminal behavior. There are criminal fines for pharmaceutical industries in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Those are common and have been criminal fines as high as $1 billion. So I say this is an industry that is ethically an unsuitable provider of a mandated medical product. There actually are a couple of laws that I know of. There may be more out there, but one is a Massachusetts Health Department regulation. The other is a Maine statute. There's already laws out there doing what this document asks other state legislators to do. So we have examples of language. They can just copy something that's already out there if they want. So here's what we want. Here's why we want it. Here's all you have to do. Here, we're going to do all the work for you. Here's the language. And that's all in one page. And that's something that I can share, and anyone can share, in 3 to 5 minutes. And then I follow that with the list of medical studies and other mainstream sources. And I follow that with a short description and fully referenced explanation of the vaccine injury compensation statistics. And I follow that with documentation and specific numbers from the pharmaceutical industry criminal activity. And it ends up counting the footnotes being altogether a six-page document. But you can sit down with a legislator and you can give them the overview in 5 minutes, and you can give examples of the other information there in another 5 or 10 minutes. And in 10 or 15 minutes, you've made your case with some compelling evidence. So if there's anybody listening who is willing to sit down face-to-face with their state legislator I'll be glad to send you a copy of this document if you'd like to use it to help you make your point. And I'm always available and willing to talk to legislators about my research and experience. I've actually got a pretty unique position, Mayor, as far as I know, and I feel quite sure, frankly, that I'm the only attorney in the country who has worked with literally hundreds of healthcare workers and seen what's going on all over the country in hospitals. So I can potentially offer some unique insights from that as well. But we've got to be legislatively active. I don't have any objection to lawsuits if they're well planned and executed. We need to address these issues on all fronts, Mayor, any plausible, practical front. But I do feel like the legislative arena is a critical one, and primarily the state level, because the federal government does not have authority under the Constitution to mandate vaccines for state residents. That's why, for example, all the school and daycare vaccine requirements are state laws and all the exemptions are state laws. So really, I think many of the more important battles are going to be at the state legislative level. But a lot of people with a lot of different areas and focuses in terms of their expertise that can contribute to these efforts. And I'm certainly willing to offer mine to anybody who would like that.
It's awesome, Alan. You know, very. I don't want anyone to think that I feel any different about legislative action, because that's really long-term. Lawsuits are temporary wins, you know, and it just feels there's an opportunity here. And I'm hoping we have some attorneys listening who've had experience within injunctions, class action lawsuits, you know, to be able to possibly be another avenue of looking at this. I agree. Very hard battle to win, you know, the legislation is the only way. I should say the only way. It is most probably the most effective way to bring about some type of change.
Well, there's so many different parts and pieces to this, Mayor, and you know, legislation is a big one. If we can get some headway with an injunction or class action, I am all for it. And if there's anything I can do to assist someone with that, I am primarily a consultant and not a litigator. So I'm not the one to take that on, but if I can help or support anyone else in any way in that arena, it would be, you know, my great pleasure to do so. And then, of course, Mayor, the obvious, but I think it bears stating anyway, prerequisite to any of this is educating ourselves, educating others, raising awareness. You know,
right.
who's going to, no one's going to be, no one's going to be out there. I mean, you don't have to be a legislative activist to get and read a copy of the document I just talked about. It's just something that I designed for legislative activists. But I had somebody email me just today, Mayor, perhaps by coincidence, if you want to think of it that way anyway, saying my husband was just diagnosed with such and such a condition and the doctor is pressuring him to get a flu vaccine and he thinks vaccines are great and I don't and what can I do? And I said, well, I just happened to have finished this document and I wrote it for legislative activists, but you know what? I'm not telling you to go meet with your legislator. If this has all the reasons that you should be questioning the flu vaccine, here's the medical literature, here's the government injury compensation statistics, here's what's going on in a very quick overview with criminal behavior in the pharmaceutical industry. Nobody's going to be able to read through all of that if they truly read and hear it and see it and come away saying, no, but they're okay. You know, everyone should still get a flu vaccine. So maybe it's helpful, the same information, helpful to people in and out of the legislative arena. So raise some awareness.
Exactly. Alan, maybe you want to share with the readers, I don't know if you have it right in front of you, some of the articles that you refer to in this week's newsletter. I thought they were all fascinating, and you gave the links to them also.
Well, one in particular I do have right in front of me, Mayor, which is a little disconcerting. I haven't read about this in depth, but the information here, the title of the article is Vaccines Will Be Made from Human Cancer Tumors. And I'll just read the first part of it. Unbelievably, the method of producing vaccines using cells that are derived directly from human cancer tumors has been approved even though the vaccines may induce cancer in recipients. And I just have to pause there for a moment, Mayor. You know, one of the things that many of us in the alternative community speculate on, if not downright adamantly believe, is that one of the purposes of vaccines is to create chronic disease in the population, thereby creating a market for other medical treatments. And are they really just getting more blatant about it? And they're saying, well, there's not enough cancer out there for us to treat. Let's boost, you know, the cancer treatment sales and start making vaccines out of culturing them on cancer tumors. You just have to wonder. Sometimes this sounds so crazy. But is it? I don't know if you have a medical opinion on that or not, Mayor. I don't know if that, you know, falls within something you'd have knowledge about or not. But, you know, just because you're culturing cells on cancer cells, viral bacterial vaccine components on cancer cells, does that necessarily mean that getting the vaccine would risk causing cancer in the recipients, or is that, you know, is that necessarily even a reasonable or fair conclusion?
It is a teaser, because next week we'll, God willing, get Dr. King on, who'll explain that to us. He would know that answer right away. It surely sounds bad, you know, but is it any better than growing it on insects, or, you know, but they're I think Dr. King would know the answer to that. Where are the risks, you know? And I have a feeling it's not going to end up being the cells that's grown on as much as it's going to be with the adjuvants that's in there, the thimerosal, the aluminum, which may be even the bigger risk of the vaccine altogether.
Well, I think if I understand correctly, Mayor, one of the things we do know at this stage in the evolution of vaccine manufacturing is that there's no way yet, I don't believe, that they can filter out all of the potential viral contaminants or DNA contaminants. And I have read in the past about a germ theory for cancer. And, of course, we've all heard the stories about listeners to this show anyway, the simian virus 40, SV40, and the early some of the early polio vaccines that were later cultured in human cancer. So there certainly seems to be a basis there for at least some cancers that maybe there's a germ cause or contributing factor there. And we know, for example, it's been shown in the Gardasil and maybe other vaccines that there are DNA fragments that get into the final product. So if there's a germ that's causing a cancer tumor and you're culturing vaccine viruses, let's say, in those cells, if that's a tumor that was caused or either caused by a virus or related to a virus, and any of those viral components end up in the final vaccine, it certainly on that level would make sense to me that you could end up having a vaccine that's going to cause cancer from which it was cultured. So, again, you tell me if that seems to make sense. But
oh, yeah, but I can tell you what all the virologists always said to me. It's what you don't know what's in it that's scary, not what you know what's in it.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, too much.
Well, on that cheerful note, Mayor, we got just about a minute or so here. I'll just give another quick plug here so we don't have time to get into another article, but homefirst.com for a range of just really incredible supplements. Sign up for the Vaccine Rights e-newsletter at vaccinerights.com. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, live on blogtalkradio.com, the Know Your Rights Hour, and rebroadcast every Wednesday at naturalnewsradio.com at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destinies.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our